welcome to the second hour of We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And Bill has our sponsor information. I didn't think I was going to get away with it 2 hours in a row, but I almost got him again.
Okay, let's try that again.
Yeah, this is the part where I just look at you.
Yeah. You say, I'm Aaron Ryan.
I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power.
It's like we planned it.
Yeah, yeah. They're our local John Deere and Kubota tractor dealer. And I'll tell you what, they do a fantastic job up there. If you guys need a tractor for either small jobs, big jobs, if you got 2 acres or 200 acres, they've got a tractor up there for you. Go see them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. They're running some pretty good service times right now. If you got something that needs repaired, give them a call. Get it in there and get it worked on. They also have field mechanics can go out and do the repairs right at your site. So give them a call at 226-9226, Team Power. And that's my bit right there. Is that okay, Aaron?
I didn't interrupt too much, did I, Bill?
No, Aaron, you did fine.
Gosh, this is just like home.
Yeah, it is.
It's just like home. It's really funny. Just like home with a lot of extra people. Oh, man. Well, our guest this hour, this is going to be a whole different thing. Switching gears from the state legislature and charitable trusts and all that stuff. We have Soraya Dean with us. Easy for me to say. She is a Clarion Project Advisory Board member and a founder of the Muslim Women's Speakers Movement and basically an international activist. She has, I wouldn't even begin to read this bio because it's really, really long, but incredibly interesting. Her website is sorayadeen.com, SORAYADEEN.com. And she's got some great resources on there. She's involved in a little bit of everything. But she's a spiritual activist, a lawyer, a certified nonviolent parent educator, and the author of Peace Matters, Raising Peace-Conscious Children. And her vision is to create 10,000 voices of hope. So that's all kind of nice, empowering them to resolve conflict, be effective communicators, all those things that we seem to be steering away from these days.
Yeah, we don't seem to teach a lot of that in school anymore.
And we've linked her article, which is kind of what brought her to us, Only Free Speech Can Stop Radical Islam. So that's a message that obviously needs to get out, so we're thrilled to give her a platform. So, Soraya, take it away.
Thank you, Erin. I am so, and Bill, I'm so feeling so great and grateful to be on your show.
No, we're glad to have you.
Thank you.
So I like the idea of speaking up, getting rid of the political correctness, getting out of the 7th century, and moving forward. I mean, your message, and I did some reading on your site, and obviously you take, you take some hits with all of this, but I don't see any other way we fix this problem.
Absolutely, Erin. You know, this dawned on me because, you know, after 9/11, my son was accused of being a terrorist, and that really hit me home. And then I began my journey into activism, and I traveled far and wide representing the Muslim community. In fact, early last year, I was in Oregon. I traveled 1,000 miles and met 1,000 people who didn't know a Muslim. I went into schools. So I put a face to the fear and uncertainty and not knowing Muslims. And when I come back home, I find it way more challenging than when I'm out of it. There's so much patriarchy and there's so much resistance to deconstruct our received theology that we are all sucked into this cycle of violence that is happening in the name of Islam and Muslims internationally.
Yeah,
and there I began to ask these tough questions, and I felt, and I still strongly, you know, and we need to put our house in order. So that's when I started speaking up, and as you quite rightly said, it's been a very challenging journey.
Yeah, because I would imagine in a lot of circles, Muslim circles, you're probably incredibly unpopular.
Very. I mean, they call me an Islamophobe, failing to realize, you know, there's a difference, there's a line between questioning your faith and fearing it, you know. I don't fear it. I feel we need to deconstruct some of the received theology, and I address that because we have gender inequality, patriarchy, misogyny, and blasphemy laws internationally that are enforced. So we need to speak into those challenging passages.
Well, and it's interesting because they've... conveniently made rules that you can't question anything, which obviously doesn't really lead to a very open dialogue. But
yeah, and how do you go back? You've really got a challenge ahead of you. You go in and rewrite a lot of the stuff that's written, like you say, in the 7th century.
And hey,
to
why
make
not just
modern.
Be a woman while you're at it? I mean,
yeah,
because women are so powerful.
I know, double bammy, yes.
Yeah, in that culture, I mean, they're running everything anyway, right?
Yes.
And you come from Sri Lanka, and how long has it been? I mean, like, how long have you been here? And give us some perspective on that. I'm just curious.
Yeah, so Sri Lanka is a little island below India,
right?
And again, you know, 15% of Muslims live in the Middle East, but they drive the conversation. Most of the Muslims live in Asia. So I've been living in the United States for the last 20 years.
So you've got
a
pretty good
balance. I was in Sri Lanka just over 5 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I was shaken to see the amount of Arabization that's happening even in little countries. The Saudis have very masterfully spread their tentacles, doling out their money and doing a lot of damage to a lot of people, particularly the Muslims.
Interesting. And I don't see... I mean, okay, anybody who knows me knows I'm not much of a feminist. Bill doesn't get to boss me around or anything, but
sure.
A lot of this stuff that passes for feminism these days, I think, actually just takes away our rights. But in that culture, you're not encouraged to be outspoken, I guess, or to question and all of those things. So how do you get people to step up at that level?
Well, to clarify your question, within the United States, we have 3.45 Americans who are Muslims. And we are the most culturally and religiously diverse community in the United States. So a lot of us bring our culture. Mm. But here in the United States, we are a melting pot.
Right.
And with the fundamental rights that we have from the Constitution, freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of movement. Freedom, really, we believe in the United States, is the power to question anything. Mm-hmm. And that, I believe, is the basis of human progress. So it is not as challenging for us women who are here in the United States. But when you look at other countries, that is why this work is so important, because I don't think women will get the opportunity to raise these issues anywhere else as they would in the United States. And my call to my community is, don't get offended. Let's address these questions. Let's be glad people are asking these questions so that people everywhere is going to benefit.
It's interesting you had said that your son was looked at as being a terrorist. And prior to that, you just there were just no problems particularly? I mean, why was that such a, I mean, obviously that would be a huge wake-up call, but was that really different for you?
Yeah, absolutely, Erin. I mean, it really shook my very being, because I was at school to pick him up that day. Mm-hmm. It was September 11th, 2007, and he was 7 years old, and he was sobbing, and it really
he was a little
me.
Kid. Okay.
Yeah. He was a little kid, yes. And then he was telling me about how the teacher had probed further. And, Mom, I was so scared, I put my head down and I didn't even say I was a Muslim. And then I thought, you know, we need to speak up, because they're born here. And this is, for me, even for me, home is not where my grandparents are buried anymore. It's here. So I thought it is very important, and it became very timely for me to show up as an American who is a Muslim and who loves this country and who's here to do my above and beyond my best. And then in that journey, I realized there's some things that I had to put right within. And so that's why I speak to the theology that needs to be reinterpreted. And I call on the community to be better and more vigorous and committed grassroots activists, because people don't know us. A Pew poll said about 60% of Americans don't know a Muslim. So there's a lot of...
So you can kind of make up whatever you want at that point, huh?
Yes, and yeah, and then you, it depends on which news and media you listen to, and there's fear bills, and then, you know, you don't know somebody, and then it's a huge cycle. And to be able to interrupt that is something I take very as a privilege and as a duty.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'm curious how you became connected with the Clarion Project. We've had Raheel Raza on several times prior, and it's funny, you have the same message, and I'm always curious how you find each other, because the Clarion Project is really, I think, making a big difference. Our guest today is Soraya Dean. She's an international activist, founder of the Muslim Women Speakers Movement, and a Clarion Project advisory board member. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. On that happy note. All right, Soraya, how did you find the Clarion Project, or did they find you?
I think both happened at the same time. It's like a marriage made in heaven. All the reformers gather and are gravitate towards the Clarion Project because, I mean, it gives us a voice. Because within the community, there's this mindset that we don't need to reform Islam. We don't need to reform the Muslims. Everything is perfect. And the Clarion Project has consistently and quite well and accurately addressed this concept of political Islam, radical Islam, extremism, and Islamism, when nobody else has. It is a nonprofit founded in 2006. And for me, I'm extremely grateful to be knowing them and associated with them and being on the advisory council, because they give me a platform. They give a platform to every moderate Muslim. We do tremendous outreach to moderate, reform Muslims who would like to join the Clarion Project and work with them. Because what is at the heart of their work, which I so deeply appreciate, is human rights and supporting activists who work for human rights.
See, and that makes the most sense because, yeah, right on their. The top of their header there, Clarion Project, challenging radical Islam, promoting human rights. And for the last, in the last administration, during the Obama years, you know, there was some unwritten rule that you weren't allowed to call it radical Islam.
Yes.
And so that doesn't help at all, obviously, just pretending that that's not even a problem.
Absolutely, yes. We fail to call it by its name, and therefore we perpetuated the status quo. And I'm so glad with the current administration we are calling it out. But I'm also disappointed that we are not that we are not at the table, Erin. We need to sit at the table. We reformers have to be given not just a seat, but a very prominent one. Because if this thing has to be got done, it can be done only within the United States.
Right, because you, theoretically you're not censored here, but in your article,
yes.
For the people who haven't read it, maybe you could tell them a little bit about the article that you wrote and that will spur them on to read it.
So See, it all began with me. You know, I was a fellow. Every year, 25 Muslims are selected to go to the to Israel Palestine Muslim Leadership Initiative. What they did was, when they knew that I was working with Clarion, I mean, they knew that I was raising these cogent, pertinent issues, they rescinded my fellowship. They said you couldn't do. Yeah, they said you can't be a Muslim and do that. It doesn't reflect well on the Muslim.
Oh boy.
Yeah, so that's helpful.
That's awful, yeah. So then there was, I mean, this is liberty, you know, that people feel you can only say what we authorize or we permit you to say. And it was repugnant to me. And I gladly said, fine, you can have this fellowship. And this really propelled me to speak louder. And I shared this problem, a challenge, really, with Clarion. And I'm here because of the outreach that I do with them. So, and I get lots of emails in private. People tell me, please make your voice known. Nobody's talking. So that ignites me. So then that was one of the reasons that I wrote that article. And then my colleague and friend, Dr. Jasser, he reads Arabic. He's one of the pioneer reformers. He gets called an Islamophobe and a bigot.
And he's Muslim.
He's Muslim,
right.
And he—I know. So these are the challenges we navigate on a daily basis. You know? So my hope is that sometimes it's not from within the community, from outside of it, when sufficient people support us, hold us, and you know, give us that power and that leap to the next level, the community might wake up.
Well, I thought it was interesting because the title of his talk that he was going to give there at Duke was The American Muslim Identity, Patriot or Insurgent. Well, okay, where I come from, if you want people to show up to something, you give it a good name. You know, I mean,
yeah.
And that would get people, you know, off the couch and in a chair to go listen. But it said, your article said here, they made him change it to The American Muslim Identity.
Yeah, that's a
boring.
Have you found that the Muslim community as a whole is starting to swing around a little bit, or is it
in the
still,
U.S. or everywhere?
Or in the U.S. I'm sorry. Yeah, in the U.S. Is it? Are they starting to kind of change a little bit, or is this like just groundbreaking?
No. I think they're still strolling. We need to sprint. They're still strolling. Mm-hmm. They're still defending, not defining themselves.
Right.
So this is very, very slow. In fact, when I was last year, Bill and Erin, in Berkeley, we opened the first mixed gender mosque for women and men. And I'm a South Asian. I don't wear the hijab. I don't speak Arabic. But I was invited to lead the prayer. And I always say to women, you know, I was the most prepared but the least qualified.
But that was a big step. That was a big step, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For them,
yes.
Yeah.
And so then I took that opportunity. We spoke. We opened the mosque. To this date, we have Friday prayers. Not one major Muslim organization has endorsed that move or support us.
Yeah.
Trudeau's next is the most liberal Islamic college called the Zaytuna College. Their students even don't even step into this female mosque, to the women's mosque. So,
we're kind of mosque stupid here.
Yeah, I didn't realize that mosques were men only.
How does it work in real life? I mean, how do they think it works? Like, what are the rules currently?
Oh, so the mosque, the imams, the person who leads the prayer is, of course, a man.
Okay.
There's a lot of patriarchy. Women are not given the podium to lead a prayer, but after events, like in the evenings, if there's something, they give her the mic. And that's not good enough. Yeah, in mm-hmm. gender equality.
Do they get to go in? Does everybody get to go in, or do they have to sit in a special place? Or
yeah, we are opening up. Originally, we had to go into the basement or somewhere without fans, and it was very bad. But now, women are given a good prayer space, but we are not given a good leadership role.
In the past, a mosque is primarily for the men only?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I didn't
and
know that.
In many places around the world, only men go to the mosque still.
Oh, and women can't even go in the basement? They just don't go at all?
Women are not encouraged and not permitted, except on special, like a festival, like Ramadan, prayer, they might go.
AKA bring your wife to the mosque day?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good way to start.
It's like bringing your kids to work.
Yeah. You know? Okay, yeah.
Oh, man. Well,
so, there's segregation in the mosques, and... But what we are asking for is, the outcomes might be different, but we're asking for equal opportunity to lead the prayer. Yeah.
Imagine that.
I don't see anything. Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, I mean, to Americans, it doesn't seem like a big thing, but it's amazing that even in this country, they still keep a really rigid hold on how things are done. Do women make it? Women don't get to do anything in the Middle East, do they? It's still
yes
only
and no.
Still only men.
Yeah, mostly men. Yeah, I mean, like you know, Saudi Arabia, they're just telling women can go to a stadium, they can drive.
Right.
In Iran, we know we're just getting to know millions of women forced to cover their head on a daily basis. That's the law. And these are scary precedents. But again, in countries like Morocco and in Malaysia, lots of things, the reform movements are taking strong shape. Like in India, the Muslim women, they went to the Supreme Court and annulled some practices that were very medieval and very cultural.
Hmm.
So a lot of things are getting stirred up. But for me, it's very slow, though.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Well, and if you have daughters, I mean, people that are raising girls in this time, are the I would imagine the kids are pretty probably pretty big fans of the reform, especially girls.
Yes, absolutely, they are. Now my daughter asks such clarifying questions which I never asked. So yeah, they support reform. They are more integrated, and that's a challenge for us too. We are all first generation immigrants, most of us, but the second generation. And I read another Pew poll that said the second generation of American Muslims are really writing their own stories, and I'm really heartened to know that. Because with my daughter, her best friend is Christian, and I send her to the church on Wednesdays to join the youth group. Because for me, it's all about knowledge and getting to know another faith. Because the way we were raised in my part of the world was, you know, get to know the other. I mean, all my father would say, all rivers flow to the same sea. So I believe what we teach at home is very critical. We can teach to love or we can teach to hate.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like your father kind of had it figured out early.
Well, that's a great way to, you know, it's a great way to make kids culturally aware. I mean, I grew up in a place where, you know, half of our population there was Jewish. And so you were either Catholic or Jewish. And so the Jewish kids went with us to things and we went to things with them and they had different food and different holidays. And I don't know, we were kids. We liked it. It was fun. You don't really think about it like this big, you know, it's not this burden of theology and all that. I mean, you're just kids. It's a great way to help them understand. We're going to come right back with our guest, Soraya Dean. We've got to take a really quick break. You can find everything about the program at wethepeopleradio.us. Back with our guest Soraya Dean. I like your quote. I don't know where I found it, but I pulled it and put it on the webpage. There are two ways to tell your story: stand up and tell it, or wait for someone else to do it. I thought, you know, that's a really good quote, and it's very good for what you're working on. You've been involved in the this reform movement for how long?
About a couple of years now.
Okay. And are you finding that that people you meet along the way? How about let's just stick with women that you meet along the way. Are they that are Muslim? Are they sort of, you know, kind of excited, want to jump in? Do they get pressure at home? I mean, is this one of those things where you have to, you know, sneak out and talk to your friend Soraya?
Yeah, I would imagine there are a lot of them are afraid.
Are you someone? Are you people's secret friend, or you know, are you the problem person?
All of the above.
Yeah, I would imagine.
All of the above. Yeah, because I mean, I have to watch my words. It's. I mean, you know, as a speaker, my mentor, Les Brown, always taught me, it's not what you have to say, but what they need to listen. And if, whenever we broach this topic of reform, there is so much resistance therein. So I have to always approach this topic very gingerly, and oftentimes we don't agree because. People feel very threatened, that they feel the religion is being challenged.
Well, you really are challenging it in kind of a good way. I forget where I read it. Of course, it's not right here. But I like the part. I mean, you said that you have to get out of the 7th century. And you have to look at the things that are written in the Quran and look at how they apply to today and potentially retool those for what's going on in the world now. And I thought, I would bet that's a tough sell in some crowds.
Yes. We have to teach that all theology is contextual, which we have not done. We have to have women who are scholars in leadership roles at mosques, and that's a powerful way to de-radicalize. Most of these youth were radicalized by religious people. Men with beards.
Right.
Those men with beards again.
I hope Bill is now wearing a beard.
He is too. Isn't that great?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think a lot of what is in the Quran, a lot of it came from the Old Testament. Some of it was kind of converted from that, wasn't it? I mean, and that doesn't
I
a lot
really
of that doesn't apply.
You. Yeah, it was some of it were hand-me-downs,
yeah.
And there are some contradictions. And I always say, when you have a weakness, admit it up front, because then nobody can use it against you. So we have some contradictions. We have some powerful passages.
Mm-hmm.
But let's deal with the contradictions, because the extremists have gone to town with literally interpreting those contradictions.
Right.
And now it's time for us to address those.
And how do you see this going forward? Like, what's your platform? I know you do a tremendous amount of public speaking. I guess I'm thinking, how do you hit the most people for, you know, how do you make your effort really magnify itself?
Okay, so for me, this is my vision and desire and hope and dream. I am bringing together about 25 women who are experts in the topics of Sharia, blasphemy, apostasy, violence, Islamism, everything. And I'm forming the first Muslim Women's Reform Voices, a speakers bureau. And it is my hope and it is my work that will include sharing these women's voices. And we are hoping corporations, there's some resistance to bringing in religion. But we have to wake up from this slumber. You know, religion is a part of everybody's lives. We're not trying to indoctrinate, but let's have some tough conversations wherever, whenever. So my hope is to really share these resources, these women's voices, far and wide, and to reach out to women's groups. Because even as a speaker, Erin, I am here because many women believed my story mattered. I wouldn't be here if not for that support.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we come together and support and uplift one another, there's this 100 monkey story where there'll be a collective consciousness. Thereafter, it doesn't matter. It'll just flow. So getting to that point is the hard work.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine getting some of the maybe more, you know, some of the influential men in the Muslim, I don't know, like circles or whatever, to get those guys to help you, like Dr. Jasser, people like that, I would imagine that helps if it's not all just women.
Yes, I agree. I agree. We can't do this alone. And we shouldn't do this alone. It will be another arduous task. Yes, they should come. I'm in contact with Dr. Jasser, and yes, we will. Then Rahil is with the reform movement in big way. She started it with Dr. Jasser. I work with Rahil very closely. We call each other a couple of times a week. So we are consolidating our efforts.
She's a really nice lady. She's very very easy to, you know, to speak to. Even though we've never met her in real life, you know, kind of like this. We talk on the radio.
Have you had success on the college campuses? I know there's always a lot of kickback there, but
yeah, they pretend to be real open-minded, but we all know.
Yeah, the whole freedom of speech thing on college campuses is a little frustrating today. But have you had much ability to speak there?
Well, sadly, no. In fact, I was at Yale last year. The South Asian students invited me for an event. When I reached out to the Muslim students and I had a conversation with them, they were oblivious to the challenges. Mm. Everybody does not recognize that there's a need to deconstruct the received theology. Everybody takes it so personally.
Right.
And the movement rising from within the colleges have been very, I mean, almost non-existent.
Right. And that's supposed to be where, you know, the big think tank.
Open ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where everybody gets to have their own thought. I was looking on your website and I noticed you, obviously it didn't give pictures of you every minute of every day, but you dress in a very Western, you wear pants and things like that. Is that a big deal? I mean, is that, like a problem thing for a lot of women?
No, I wouldn't think so. Not at all. I have friends who dress like me. We within the United States, we do not have that as a huge issue. I don't know, but when I went to Sri Lanka, where I was born and where I was raised, I saw that as an issue. Many women had turned to wearing covering their head and bodies with long.
Yeah, it seems like they're going backwards, I guess. I'm noticing in the last, like, maybe 10 years, it just seems like there's this really regressive. Sounds like you have a furry friend, too. Ours, of course, would be making sound, but we don't bring them to the radio. Not because they don't want to come. But, no, I've noticed that there seems to be more, I don't even know if it's popularity. I mean, what makes women want to go back to that being covered from head to foot?
You know, I think it is an identity crisis for some. They want to show up and say, I am a Muslim and I will continue to be one. You can't stop me. Because I know a friend who she has a sister and a mother in the same family. My friend, she gave up wearing the hijab. Then her mother continues to wear it and her sister started wearing it because of all the issues around identity and the challenges. She said, I'm going to wear this and show myself as a Muslim.
Do you find that a lot of the women that want to dress like that were actually brought up wearing it, or they're
it seems
or they're
like it's
going
like
back to
popular,
their roots, or you know what's.
I see a large number. Speaking out of my, finally, I always believe firmly, truth is only what you have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
When
sure.
I was in Sri Lanka this time, I was stunned. My cousins were wearing covering and wearing this long garb. So they were not brought up. We didn't wear this in back home.
Right.
But
interesting.
There is this fight. There is this rush to claim an identity.
Yeah. Right.
And there is, of course, a lot of mosques sponsored and run by Saudi Arabia. They have a certain kind of theology that they preach. Women should behave and
mm-hmm.
All of that. So that has a huge influence.
Sure.
Yeah, it's just a mystery, obviously. I was born here, you know, in this country and live here. So it's hard for me to understand, but I look at the women and I'm thinking, why would you want to go backwards that? I mean, because to me that is backwards, to where you are under somebody's thumb and you can only have your eyes sticking out, and that's, I mean, you literally
yeah,
look,
is, yes.
Yeah, you literally look like a patio umbrella. I mean, there's jokes on the web about that, you know, the three patio umbrellas in it. It just, I don't know. I don't understand why women wouldn't, struggle against that, I guess.
Yes. I think we are in a state of slumber, even FGM, the female genital mutilation. 98% of women are
subjected
to that in Egypt. And I don't know if you have seen the beautiful documentary that was done by the Clarion Project to highlight this. And when the movie came out, there was so much backlash, particularly for Rahil and her team. So the community is in a slumber, and when people like Clarion highlight these radical practices, they are pushed away, and we are pushed away for working with Clarion. So this is a very bizarre, unhealthy cycle that we reformers are pushed into.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, for good question, why are women not owning their beauty and their power
and
hiding behind some cloth? That's a great question.
I mean, could you imagine if the federal government said, okay, all women now have to, wear a covering from head to toe? Are you kidding me? That'd be like, I mean, in some places, actually, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, I think we've overcorrected in a large way. I mean, we could use a little modesty in a lot of circles, but, trying to mandate that for people, it seems impossible to me that in this day and age, and I really don't care what country you live in, I mean, you would think that there would have to be massive social pressure, I guess, for that to take over. Like Iran, you look at pictures of them in the 70s, and it looked like here. And now, all of a sudden, it's like the Dark Ages again. And all the
punishments. This is why I don't support this. Yeah, I mean, every woman should have the freedom to wear. But when I see millions of Muslim women who are suffering because of a mandated dress code, I have to stand with them. My heart and my duty is to stand with those women who are being oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see the need to glorify anybody who's wearing it.
No, and I guess it's not so much the clothes. I don't mean to be hung up on that, but with that goes a measure of subjugation and control. And they've given up their identity because it goes with all sorts of, I mean, obviously I've never lived under it. I've just read about it, but the restrictions and the rules and the control and the lack of ability to make decisions and go to school and all these things. I'm thinking, why would you do that to yourself? And why would you do that to your kids? We have to take a really quick break. And so you have 2 minutes to think about the answer. I know there is no answer, but I guess it is one of those things. If I had to pick one thing I want to know, that's what I want to know. I don't get it. I don't understand how they make it look attractive for people to do. We'll be right back. Our guest is Soraya Dean. She is part of the Muslim Reform Movement. Alrighty, we're back with our guest, Soraya Dean. All right, Soraya, we've got like 10 minutes, and we haven't talked at all about...
Where did these 40 minutes go?
I know.
Flies.
People are like, I don't know what I could talk about for an hour. I'm like, are you kidding me? Burn that in the grocery store when you run into somebody. How's it going? And then, you know, an hour goes by. I was curious about your parent education thing. Why am I not finding the words I want? Oh, yeah. It says you're an author, so I'm assuming it's a book, but it could be something else. But Peace Matters, Raising Peace Conscious Children. Is it a book?
It's a book, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, authors can be, you know, online, or you can be an author of a lot of things. So, okay.
Yes.
And that book, so let's let you promote that a little bit. We don't want to get away without a shameless plug for a book, for heaven's sakes. That's what...
Yeah, so it's because I don't know whether you are a fan of Mother Teresa. I mean, when she was awarded the Nobel Prize for Peace,
I think it's against the law to be not a fan of Mother Teresa, isn't it?
Who's not?
I think that makes you a pretty bad person. No one should admit that.
She said something very profound. They asked, "What is the message for the world?" She said, "Go home and love your families." And I am a firm believer that what peacemaking begins in our homes. So. In later years, I got certified in nonviolent parenting, and I teach these classes and I embody that as much as I can because, you know, parenting is the only job that you are called upon to perform without experience.
And you can't be, well, I guess you can kind of be fired, but not really.
Yeah. So, did you ask me what it was about, Erin?
Yes, I was just curious. I hadn't, I didn't do any research on that, and I thought, kind of an interesting idea. So, tell me this, in a nutshell, what does nonviolent parenting mean? Are we talking about just not spanking? Or are we talking about not yelling at your kids all the time? Because obviously, I would be a big fan of not yelling at your kids all the time.
I know we have to sometimes, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are moments, but...
Yeah. I think for us to really understand not being manipulative and not being transactional in our parenting, because oftentimes what happens is that we fail to realize our children are born just under 25% of their brain developed. We are sculptors. We can really transform their lives by being present for them, by listening. Empathy is a huge skill we teach. I think the world suffers today not because of a lack of resources and all of that, but because of a lack of empathy. We are all walking with this invisible sign, recognize me, respect me. We kind of fail in doing that. With parenting, really listening to the child side of it, and it's disciplining necessary, but it's not being transactional in the way that most parenting is done today. So being mindful, it's kind of a little being a mindful parent.
Yeah, and it's so important to, as a parent, you know, you send your kid off to school every day, and you hope you know what they're being taught in the classroom, but I think a lot of times they neglect to realize what they're being taught by their friends and peers.
The real education that goes on at school.
Exactly. And then when they come home, I think that's where the parent has to step in and really talk about, you know, their experiences outside the home.
Well, yes. Good or bad, I mean, I think most of us spend our adulthood going, oh, wow, I sounded just like my mom, or I just sounded just like my dad. And and as a kid, you don't really realize how much influence they have. But boy, when you grow up and you become them, truly, I told my mom that the other day. I said, you know, every problem that I solve, I think, I do in the back of my mind, I think, what did my mom say? Because she was really good at that. She was very good at that.
That's awesome. Yeah, we try to understand anger. I got my participants to write two columns. You know, in the one side you write, how did you experience anger growing up? How was anger expressed? And then you take them to the next column and say, how do you express it? And there's such strong similarities. So much of how we parent is learned. And in nonviolent parenting, at the heart of it is, you know, not judging. Because labeling and judging and blaming is
our family's really good at that. Usually,
judging.
It usually involves mocking, though. I mean, it's kind of a cultural problem, I think, that we have.
I know. So simply put, let's say you walk into a room, somebody has eaten your pizza. Without saying, hey, you're greedy, you learn to say, you ate the last slice of my pizza. So that's a huge shift when we communicate like that. because in the earlier instance, you are blaming and shaming and judging. Maybe he was not great. He didn't know you had not eaten the pizza. Maybe he thought it was for him. So these are the mistakes that we make on a daily basis. And I'm not, I always say that I'm not arrived. I'm still journeying. But just that I'm mindful when I have to apply my brakes.
Sure. Well, you know, and it's interesting because that, that's like the small version of what you're doing with your religion,
yeah.
You know, trying to make, you know, trying to make good communication, trying to keep things, sensible and on an even level. And that's interesting what you're trying to bring to, this idea of radical Islam and bring it back down to the communication level so that people can actually learn a different way to participate. Funny.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think Muslim children have a whole other set of problems to deal with mm-hmm. in our society. And I think Muslim parents have a little bit tougher job ahead of them when you talk about raising with nonviolence. It's that's a tall order.
Yeah, especially when there's this big push to draw them in. How big is that anyway? I mean, do you have parents who say to you, "Gosh, I caught my kid watching, you know, scary videos of, you know, the extreme stuff."
I think the issue mostly, I mean, they did a study in London after several of those violent terror activities. What they found was most of these children who turned to terrorism, they didn't feel they belonged. The parents were uprooted, then the children, they're between cultures, and the parents are trying to say, be this person versus be this. Yeah. And there was a lot of confusion for them.
Kind of like why they joined gangs of any kind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And I recognize some of that because I'm a first-generation immigrant and I bring a lot of Eastern values. And then my kids are so Americanized. I struggle, you know, between which, how to really make them understand some cultural values that I hold very dear, like respect for when there's an elder who walks in, you know, we grew up standing up and greeting. But my kids, they are like oblivious to all of that.
Right, the handshaking and all these other pleasantries,
trust
like saying
that's,
hello.
That's just not your kids. I think that's our culture as
a
whole.
Kids in general.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, when you...
So finally we all have the same issues, you know?
Yeah,
well,
at the end
so.
Of the day.
Yeah, I think so.
We are intertwined and interconnected, yes.
Well, I'm glad that you've taken up this work. You seem very, very well suited for it.
Thank you, Erin.
You really do. And Raheel is a wonderful person, I'm sure, to work with. She's, it's funny, I'm sure she gets mad, but she seems like one of those people who really never gets mad.
She doesn't.
Yeah, she's like, you know, in the big the big meltdown and the crisis, and she's like, okay, everybody, let's not get upset.
She does.
Yeah, she'd be fun to work with.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a quick hour. We could go another hour, I'm sure.
Yeah, talk to Stephen or find us online. You can go to our webpage at wethepeopleradio.us and you can pull the archive of this show. The MP3 file will be up this afternoon, commercial free for you, and you can use it for whatever you want if it's of any help to you.
Oh, fantastic. And you know, Erin and Bill, I live in Los Angeles.
It's
a 6-hour drive for me.
You're not that far.
Yeah, so, I mean, if your listeners are there, if there are churches and synagogues, we would love to come and speak and share our message.
Okay.
And also to remember the work of Clarion that are supporting the Reform Voices. It's very important to know that we have partners and allies who support us. And we need more people to support us.
Outstanding. Well, if you're coming to Northern California, please get a hold of us.
Thank you, Erin.
All right. Thank you very much.
Have an awesome rest of the day. That was our guest, Soraya Dean. You can find all of her information at sorayadean.com or wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week.